Okay, why don't we get going? So we're going to just do a little bit of input, then we're going to do the C preprocessor. Input is reading from standard in, this file star that I kind of opaquely mentioned. There's a simple way to do it, which is character by character. You should rarely use character by character input. You know, and doing anything like one byte at a time is inefficient, but you know it's fine to do in some cases if you don't. It's not a performance-oriented thing. So get care or get car or get char returns. Well, it's basically going to read a character, but it returns it a little bit strangely as an integer. Anybody have a guess why or already know why because I wrote it somewhere else? Yeah, basically they're combining. They're either going to give you back the character or notification that you've basically reached the end of the input stream or the end of a file if you're reading from a file. Or you could think of it, which is just the input stream here is what we're reading from. So we have to have some way that's, characters are all represented in ASCII code from 0 to 255. So basically all the numbers are used up from 0 to 255. So we need something that's out of bounds outside of that. So that's why we pass an integer. And then here we just kind of treat it like a character when we print it. And you can see this while is doing a couple things. First, it's assigning C to whatever the result of get char is. And then it's comparing that to EOF as a truth value. And as long as it's not EOF, it's going to print out the value. So EOF is just, it's just like -1. But yeah, it's defined in a standard header. We'll talk about those headers in a second. It's part of standard IO.h. Yeah, but, you know, it looks like it's something nicer, but it's not. Okay, and then we can do line-by-line input. Line-by-line input should be done with F get S. There was something called get S, which is would just get us the next string from input, but that's remarkably unsafe to use, and therefore it's considered deprecated because if somebody gives you an input string that doesn't, you know, all sorts of attacks have been overflowing buffers that people have passed into get s, so you don't do that anymore. And the key is that f get s, you specify the buffer to read something into, and then you say how big it is, so no matter what, you will never overflow that buffer and write more into it than it accepts. And then here you can see that thing I referred to, standard in. Standard in is a variable of type file star. You shouldn't directly be using it for anything other than a routine that expects that exact thing. So for example, if we do a man on fgets, we can see here that the third type, let's ignore this keyword restrict right now, is a file star. It's expecting a file star, which is calling a stream. And that's what standard in is. So we should be comfortable passing it in there. We could pass other file stream stars, but they probably wouldn't do what we want at this point. So anyway, what this does is basically keep going until it gets a null back to indicate something we're kind of done. And in this case, it will print out a line number and the string that we just read in. So kind of a simple way to read a line at a time. And which is something you're going to do in this homework 2 if you haven't done it already. Very simple. All these programs you're writing for homework 2 should be very short. If you're writing a lot of code, you're probably not doing it right, and you're making it more complicated than it needs to be. Okay, so any questions about that? Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Like, could I pass in just use... I haven't introduced the size of operator yet, so I wasn't doing that explicitly, but sure, you could do that. So there are better ways to make it so this is kind of connected better to this, is kind of your point. But let's come back to that later. Other questions? Yeah. This? I don't think that'll work. Because what get char would have, calling a function is of highest precedence, so it'll get that. It'll compare, then it would, equals is of really low precedence, so it would then do a comparison, and then you would get back a 0 or 1. So it sounds like it would print the wrong things. So you need these, I think. Of course, you can always just try it and run it. But I think this is also clear. Okay, good question. Other questions? So that's standard input and standard output. We'll do a lot more about input and output when we deal with files in a minute, but that's kind of very basic. You know, a lot of little Unix tools are based on reading lines and doing stuff with them. For example, if you've ever used, like, the tool grep. Grep looks through programs for certain, like, expressions. So I might look for main in, say, every file that ends in .c, and you can see there's a bunch of main routines in there. That's just kind of like a line-by-line program, which reads lines and looks for the string that I passed in this case, main. So a lot of Unix tools are like that. Okay, I want to kind of move on a little bit because I'm moving way slower than I planned. When I plan these things out, I'm like, I'm not going to have enough material, but then I'm moving way slower than that. So let's look at the C preprocessor. This is not a good example of the C preprocessor, but here's something, for example, where we see in this code we have an array of size 10, and then maybe we want to initialize it, and we're kind of repeating that value, 10. And so if I then later change this to 100 because somebody told me, hey, we have more than 10 integers to store, my initialization code down here, which may, of course, be very far away, won't correctly be changed. So that seems like a code maintenance problem. So one thing we can use, there are many ways to solve this problem, but one way we can kind of deal with that is with this C preprocessor, which is a little macro language that lets us do a bunch of different things. Here's kind of a classic simple usage of the C preprocessor. Here's a directive you give to it, hash define. Hash define says, I'm going to call some object, in this case array size, and wherever you see array size in the code, essentially replace it with the thing that's on the right over here. So it'll essentially put a 10 here and put a 10 here, and then of course if I change this to 100, it'll kind of work. There's lots of different ways to do this, but this is just one example. And the C preprocessor, it's called the preprocessor because it essentially runs over your code and does all this macro language stuff before you get to actually dealing with the C code. So when you're staring at like a code that's called a .c file and it has hashtag defines in it as well as just what you would call straight C code, it's really a mix of CPP, C preprocessor code, and C code. And the C preprocessor, you can think of it as running first and processing all these macros. And we'll look at a few different types of macros right now, okay? So we're never just looking at straight C code. Yeah. Yeah, it could be, but I mean, even like there's other ways to just define a global integer. But if you define an integer up here, for example, then you're taking up part of your namespace. And so you're using, like, you know, if you're naming something, you have to make sure that it's not used somewhere else in the code. But if you're okay with that, then it's also fine to use. Like, what we often might use is like a const integer, you know, whatever, array size or something like that. We haven't talked about const as a keyword, but it basically is a way to declare an integer and say that's never going to change. But we'll get to that later. Okay. This is going to, basically the way this works is if you're processing this file, once you hit the hash define, from there on it works, and until maybe you undefine it. So if you're compiling a lot of different files, you have to make sure that this definition, if you're using it, is defined in each of those, and we'll talk about ways to do that. But basically just process, like, you can think of the C preprocessor as going through this text, and once it hits here, it says, oh, now anytime I see array size after this, I'm going to replace it with 100. But if I had, for example, tried to use it up here, that would have been a problem, because it doesn't know about it yet, if that makes sense. So if I'd said int x array size here, that wouldn't work. This is a buggy. And it would just complain. This is purely, that's a great question. This is not this is not anything that happens at runtime. I'm not explaining this in a kind of a pure form, and I should. The C preprocessor isn't have anything to do with how your code is running. It's before you run anything. It's just like transforming the text of your code. Then we're going to get to the C compiler, which is going to take your C code after all that's happened and turn it into like the runnable code that we're talking about. So the runnable code doesn't see anything about hashtag define or whatever. It just it becomes essentially your text looks like this is 100 here and this looks like it's 100 here. Then we compile that code. And that's the only reality for the world. All this stuff happens before anywhere near that. So it's a static pre-running, pre-compilation kind of thing. Does that make sense? I didn't explain this. I'm kind of doing this quickly, and I was imagining we'd come back to it in a little bit more depth. But, of course, that's causing problems. So better to ask questions. Kind of makes sense. We're just going through the text, and we just kind of do this like it's a text replacement almost. In fact, you could use CPP on anything. You could, CPP, you can run it on whatever I was calling that. And you can see it spits out a bunch of other stuff, which we can ignore, but you can see in the code that it generates, it just kind of produces the 100. So you can kind of run it standalone. But you shouldn't do that unless you know what you're doing. So don't do that. And that includes most everybody. Okay. Here's another routine that we could write. We can write routines. They're called macro functions or something like that. I forget what they're called, essentially function-like macros. So you can define something that looks like a function. But what it's going to do is it's going to take some code that you put over here and just essentially put that code down here. It does in a textual way. It's not defining a function. It's defining some text you should replace. So if we wanted to define like a swap like we've been doing, we could write something like this. I'm just going to go ahead and show the solution. We say everywhere someone writes swap AB, what we should do is put the code int temp equals x, x equals y. Or sorry, that's not correct. That should be x, y. Or I guess I could just make it AB for make it clear what I'm trying to do. B, A equals B. B equals temp. Did I do that correctly? No. So this just is a kind of a weird way to throw some code in that just does a swap for you. Now, why would you do that? Why would you do that instead of defining a function to do that swap? Why would you maybe think this is a better idea to throw this code anywhere I put a swap? Yeah, it might be a little more efficient, right? Calling a function has a little bit of an expense, right? You jump into a function, you pop out. This is a way to define something like that. Yes, like it's just like writing this code like this. It's smart enough here, sorry. It's smart enough here to know that when I say, these parameters A, B here, that I'm going to go ahead and replace those with X, Y. That's right. There's no type checking. It's just purely text. So you have to be very careful when you do this. I'm not recommending it. I'm just telling you about it. We'll talk about good practice later. It's just something you'll see in C code. It's a completely different language, but it doesn't have any checking. It's easy to overabuse. It's useful in some cases. We'll talk about those cases, but you'll see code like this occasionally. So, yeah. Oh, will it complain? Yeah, well, let's just go ahead and do it. And then we'll do an example that... this is still not quite... I'm going to make this a proper C program, though we don't know what those characters exactly mean yet. So this does the right thing, you can see that. But, you could, for example, what if you did something weird, you could do all sorts of weird things in here, and it would just, if it compiled. Oh, would it complain about that? Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Right, great. So let's do something like this. Is that what you mean? The printing won't be very useful. I guess, there we have to actually make sure to print it out. So that the code compiles to something. Yeah, that actually works for a very weird reason. Do people know why that works? Yeah, it just says that's a character, but I'm going to treat it like an integer, swap them all around. It actually works. If I had a more complex type, it would have complained. That was a bad example. we haven't looked at, actually, every type we kind of know, that would actually kind of work in a way that was weird. But if we'll later come back to this, and I'll show you an example that doesn't work. Just a brief overview of CPP. We're not getting into the details of this yet. Here's some more examples. You can conditionally include code. So if something hasn't been defined, define it. That's if no def. And you can, of course, do if it has been defined. If something has been defined, then do something. Conditional inclusion of C preprocessor is really useful for you if you're trying to build portable code. So you'll see this in like an operating system. Like, hey, if you're running a ifdef, this is a Intel x86. Include this code that's x86 specific. Ifdef, this is a Spark or some other architecture. Include some other code. So this is used all the time in kind of portability. Not that interesting here. What I really want to show you. Oh, here's a debugging printf. This is kind of a crazy one. That you can have a debugging printf that's pretty nice. That if it's defined, basically it'll print out something. Otherwise, it won't print out anything at all. I'm just skipping through these. I'm going through these too quickly for them to really make sense. What I wanted to really show you is the hashtag include, which we have to understand. It's also a C preprocessor directive. You'll see it in two forms. One with double quotes around it, which says, look for a file called this in the kind of directory that I'm building this code in. So this is, I'm calling this cpp6.c, and you can see here that it's saying include this code. And that's all that does is say find some code called this file and include it. And you can see here it includes this whole file here. And then if you see brackets around something, that says include a file, but that file isn't something that's found in the current directory. It's actually found in a standard place where a bunch of files what are called header files are found, and standard io.h is one of them. And all include is doing, it's not doing anything with the compiler, it's not doing anything other than taking whatever's in that file that we're saying to include and dumping it into whatever file you're in and then compiling it after that. That's all hashtag include does. So I see now that I should have introduced CPP a lot more slowly, but that's my fault. In any case, that means we can have a piece of code that just looks like this, okay? So it just says hashtag include cpp-6-code.c. So we could compile that. Let's call it main cpp, what did we call it, 6.c. We could compile that, and that works. Remember, that all that file was it said include this other thing. So when it's looking to compile that, first it runs a preprocessor, so it basically shoves this code in there, and then it recursively says, oh, shove whatever standard io.h is. And standard io.h is not located in this directory because we're telling the compiler this is like a standard header file that somebody else has put somewhere. It's on Linux systems, it's in a directory called like /user/include. It's in a little bit weirder spot on my Mac, otherwise I would show you that. But it just says include a bunch of stuff. And in fact, it turns out anytime we're using routines like standard io routines like printf or getc or whatever, getchar, we need to include standard io.h at the top. So that's a preprocessor directive. So there's a lot to learn about the preprocessor. If you are interested in it, go read about it. The GNU CPP, like there's a PDF that's like 200 pages long that tells you all about the preprocessor. You don't have to know a lot about it to know most things, but occasionally you'll get stuck dealing with it, so it's useful to understand. Okay, what does that finally get us to? It gets us to, why did I even talk about that? Because I wanted to talk about what just looks like a Hello World program. So this is a proper Hello World program, almost. It has a main routine. Main tells us where we start processing. It calls printf. Because it calls printf, we have to include standard io.h so that when we're compiling, we know something about printf, which is in the C library. This just basically tells the compiler what arguments to expect for printf. In fact, let's go ahead and compile it without that include in there. Let's see what happens. Let's call it hello1. You can see it's saying basically it's just generating a warning. In fact, on my Mac, it uses a different compiler. It's not using GNU compiler. It's using C Lang. It's a different compiler. And it can tell you it's a very polite compiler. It says, note, please include the header standard io.h or explicitly provide a declaration for printf. But it still generates the code because it's linking with the C library. We don't know what linking it is, but it's basically including the C library code, which has a printf in it. The compiler just wants to know more about printf when it's doing this compilation. So we could go ahead and run this, and it still works. It just the compiler doesn't like it because if we make a mistake, it can't do this kind of type checking that we were talking about earlier. So by including standard io.h, we're telling it about all the functions that in the standard io part of the C library, and when we compile, we don't get any warnings. And then, of course, we can... Oh, I'd ran main, but I should have run hello1. Sorry. That was tricky. So that's a hello world. Let's do a little bit more, and then we'll... most mains take a couple of arguments. So let's look at those. Int argc is the number of command line arguments to this program. And then and we have to look at this little piece here, char star argv brackets. What does that look like? Let's not read this comment because it tells you. What does that look like to somebody? How would you describe that to somebody? Well, kind of. Argv is an array, okay? And what is an array of? Well, you can't really tell because it could be an array of just random pointers to characters. But in this case, we're going to know it's a bunch of pointers to essentially strings. And what those strings are, of course, when you run a program, like if I run hello 1, our old program that we ran, I could, of course, type some other things. Like I might say, you know, dash, dash, help, and then, you know, me with my homework or whatever. That would be like how I run a C program and pass it a bunch of arguments. Now, what's hello 1 going to do when I do that? Safe to do? Who feels like this is good or bad? Who feels like it's bad? I shouldn't do this. Some people feel like it's bad. Anyone feel like it's fine? Why is it fine? I'm not doing anything with the arguments. Yeah, I'm just ignoring them. So when this plea for help is ignored. This is actually a very rude program. So I'm not doing anything with arguments. Let's say I want to do something with the arguments. Let's say I want to print them out. Let's just go ahead and look at how to do that instead of making you do it. Here's a simple program that just goes through the arguments 0 through argc minus 1 and then just prints each out as a string. So let's go ahead and compile this program. Let me keep it up on the screen for you so you can see it right there. And then let's go ahead and compile it. And then let's run it. And of course, hello, this is a program. If I do that, you can see that's how I get those command line arguments. They're just put there for me. In fact, the way you should think about that is somebody, before your main started running, on your stack, as they jump into main, before they've done that, they've set up your stack to have those arguments on it. And that's actually done by the operating system and the linker, the loader. But we don't have to know why that happens. So that's how you're going to write a program, like a Unix command line utility, that processes those arguments. It has to look through char star argv and use argc. Okay, so that's an array of strings. We understand arrays now, and we understand int is just argc, the number of command line arguments, and this is how you would print them out. And that is a hello world. So you have to understand all those pieces to get to this point where this kind of makes sense. So any questions about our hello world? Yeah? Yeah. No, it's really, okay, let me just draw what it is. What is argv? It's good to understand what argv is, because later you might have to deal with it. What is argv? It's declared like this, but it is of some size. What it's basically saying is somewhere there's this thing argv, which is kind of referring to the beginning of this thing, which is a bunch of, each of these you can think of as a pointer to a character or an address, and these are essentially referring to somewhere else there are some strings, which might have, you know, a bunch of letters in them. So these are just a bunch of addresses of these strings. Those are the exact same thing. Yeah. Yeah, an array of pointers to characters versus an array of essentially strings is exactly the same thing, right? There's no differentiation. We just have to know that argv, those are all strings. It's a little bit weird. So that's why even a simple hello world is a little bit weird, because you have to look at argv and understand it. You have to understand what an array is. You have to understand what a pointer is. You have to understand what in the world is hashtag include standard io.h doing. It's, you know, including some stuff that's telling the compiler something. And now, of course, what we can do is I've been kind of occasionally using this thing, GCC, the compiler. And the compiler does all that stuff for you. It has a whole bunch of steps that it takes in order to make what's called an executable. When I say dash O, what I'm making is an executable from the source file. Oh, my God. And what you can see here is a very kind of simple common usage of the compiler, where I say make an executable file called hello3 and then do it from my C file. That actually does a whole bunch of steps. if we do a dash V, you can see like on Mac OS here all the stuff that actually happens in order to compile this program. It's somewhat complicated. On Linux, it's different. I won't show you later. The compiler is a very complicated tool. It's a big program. CS as a discipline, you can kind of think of it as there's a whole bunch of complicated programs we built, and at some point we decided we should have a class about that program. So the operating system became a complicated program. We have a class about that. The compiler became a very complicated program. We have a class about that, we teach about that. And so a compiler, you could spend your life studying compilers. What your job is in this class is to know it a little bit as a tool and figure out things that it does for you. You can see, for example, one thing I always do is I always compile with dash W all. It says, please turn on every warning you can think of, because I know that if you have a warning, I want to probably get rid of it. And there's a lot more stuff we'll do with the compiler as a tool as time goes on. Okay, so that's all of that we did to get to Hello World, which just seems like a very sad place to get to after all this work, but hopefully you have a little better idea what's going on in this program than you would have if I just showed you this on day one. Are there further questions about it? Does Hello World kind of make sense? Remember, the goal was like all the characters on this page should make sense, so hopefully they kind of do. Okay, so we have a little bit of time. Let's, before we take another break, so let's do a little bit more. Let's go back into some, now we're gonna kind of change gears a little bit. We've gotten to Hello World. Now we're trying to get to some interesting programs. It turns out interesting programs have more than just integers in them and characters and strings. So the first thing we're gonna look at very quickly is new types. Here we're gonna represent real numbers. So not just integers anymore. There's two types of that. One is called a float, and one is called a double. Doubles have more precision but are larger. Here's a couple ways you could initialize them. You could say float f equals 1.0, for example. Or you could say, for example, the double d equals 1 times 10 to the 12th. That would be fine, too. And then you could print them out. I could also print out their size with this new operator called size of. We haven't seen that yet. Size of is an operator just like any operator in C. It's a unary operator, which takes, you can either pass it the name of a type, like a name of a variable, or you could actually pass it like float, for example. That would be fine too. Float keyword. And size of is useful when you want to see the size of different things, and we'll see why that's useful in a second. So here we just have a very simple program where we print out the size of a float, a double, and an int. Okay, and we've initialized those values to something. And you can see our printf string, we can print out %f, or we can print, this is a nice thing you often use with floating point, you'll say like %.2f, which says only do two digits past the decimal. Okay, so let's run that. And you can see, for example, that was our big number. This is our standard kind of printout. You can see here an integer is 4 bytes, a float is 4 bytes, and there's a double, which is a more precise representation of floating point numbers, is 8 bytes, so it's bigger. You should basically, unless you really have a space concern, always use doubles. Otherwise, you'll get into cases where you surprisingly get weird behavior. Doubles and floats are not perfect representations of real numbers. We have binary representation in a fixed space. It's an approximation. Let's just make sure we understand that by looking at a program that will drive you crazy, or at least make you, oh, that's not that program. Let's look at this program. It's a cool blog about how crazy floating point is. Okay, let's just stare at this code for a second. So it initializes a float, 0.01, and then a sum of 0, and then just kind of adds to the sum this 0.01 100 times. Then it has creates another float called product where it says f is, you know, product is equal to f times 100. So instead of adding f to sum 100 times, another way we could get, you'd think, the same value is by multiplying it 100 times. And then there's a kind of a third value there of f times 10. So, sorry? Oh, this is just saying it's a floating point. You don't have to do that there because it's kind of redundant. There's a few places where we can, like when we declare things, we can add a letter to make it kind of clearer, but you don't have to do that necessarily. We'll also see that with unsigned types. Sometimes you'll see like a U in there, and we'll come back to that later. Okay, so let's go ahead and compile that. And that was float 2. And then what we'll see here is a bunch of values that we thought were going to be the same thing, but are not. Those two in particular, I don't know why I have the last one. The last one doesn't make any sense. Yeah, that's actually fine. So you can see here, we had two ways of computing what we think should be essentially f times 100. We added it a bunch of times, 100 times to it, you know, 0.01, 100 times should be that same value as f times 100. But when we print it out here with this complex printout, which is just printing it out to 15 digits of precision, I'm going to get rid of this one because it's actually not useful in this demo here. That depends on the hardware. And let's also get rid of this part because it's kind of confusing the output. So let's look at the program again. So does this code make sense? Like you're just 100 times looping and adding 0.01, adding it up. So it should be equal to 0.01 times 100. And this is 0.01 times 100. But when you... But when you run it, you can see that they're not equal. And the reason, of course, is floating point is imperfect. And when you add a bunch of numbers together and... you don't get the number that you might expect. And why is that? Because floating point is an approximate representation. We could spend a lot of time on this and really understand deeply floating point representation. I'm going to choose not to do that. All it means is when you're using floating point code, sure, you should use doubles, but things that look like they should be equal are often just close to being equal. So if you're using like equals equals to compare two doubles, you're probably writing the code wrong. Because equals equals is saying that they're really exactly the same. When you really need to do is basically say, are they approximately the same? And there's a whole bunch of internet knowledge on how do you write basically a comparison function for doubles that is kind of works and kind of makes sense. And it turns out there's an art to doing that. And in fact, the blog post that I reference here at Random ASCII, which is very disturbing of a name, but is actually a good website here. It's about comparing floating point numbers, the 2012 edition. People have been working on this problem for decades, and it turns out like how that actually looks. I think I've recorded it here somewhere. Right, this is like almost equal relative, and this is this code that this guy's developed over the years to kind of say two floating point values are essentially equal. We're not going to try to understand that right now. So anyway, I just want to make it clear, these things are not obviously, it's kind of like not obvious that they work, they don't work in the way that you would think they do. They work as a computer representation, approximate representation of floating point numbers. For example, this code here says, here's an integer, 16777217. It says, here's a double, 16777216, and then it asks if they're equal. You know, does I equals equals F? Now we're comparing an integer and a double. And by looking at these two numbers, what would we say? Probably no, right? But if we compile this code and run it, this is the right version, sorry. I'd use the double here. I need to use a float. And if we just use a floating point representation, when the representation gets kind of smash down and these two things actually become just the same value. And so floating point, it's easy to make those mistakes with floating point. It turns out a double has enough precision to differentiate these two things. We could really get into the bits of that, but I honestly just don't want to. I just want to warn you, if you're using you use doubles all the time in code because you think, I have these real valued things that I'm representing, temperature, height, whatever. You cannot treat them like integers. In fact, if you're writing like banking code, for example, like, you'd think it'd be natural to represent dollars as a double, but that would be a bad idea. What everybody does with that is they'll create their own, like, dollar structure, and they'll have the dollars and cents in it as like integers, and they will have routines to manipulate those in a way that makes sense because they want it to be precise and they don't want to lose a cent here and there unless they're trying to rip you off, which is actually probably happening all the time in Wall Street. So I forget I said any of that. But you know what I mean. If you want to be precise, be very careful with doubles. That's really the only point. I mean, you should kind of look at this and say, this is all broken, and you're kind of right. But it works well for a lot of things, and it's fast. Remember, that was the answer we gave a long time ago with C. It's fast, so a lot of things it's good enough for. Okay, so that's a confusing discussion of doubles without any real understanding of it, but we're just going to leave it at that. If really, people really are excited about doubles, I can point you to a bunch of readings. There's a bunch of very nice articles on the internet, but I'm not going to really go into it in any more detail. Okay, any questions about that? How could you have a question, Ben? I basically told you you shouldn't ask me any questions. But you could still ask a question. Okay. So I want to get to something a little bit more interesting, but to do that, let's get a little bit refreshed because we're in the world of doubles and the C preprocessor, which both apparently are horrible things to talk about. So let's come back, and when we come back, we're going to talk about something that's going to be in every C program you write, which is a structure, how to create your own types. So let's call it a 5-minute break and come back then.